Now, a bit of a flashback on August 20, 1977. Voyager 2 launched from Cape Canaveral, Florida, starting its now 41-year journey towards the stars. It's currently 18 billion kilometres away from home. Voyager 2 recently entered interstellar space. So far from home, in territory we've never visited before, the only place in the world still listening to Voyager 2 is Australia, as our two largest telescopes are the only ones actually able to detect the signal that the craft is sending. Here to chat with us a little bit more is Jane Kaczmarek. She's one of the CSIRO astrophysicists at Parkes and is still working with Voyager 2. Jane, thank you so much for speaking with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So what has Australia's role in the Voyager mission been so far?
The Canberra Deep Space Communication Complex in Canberra, they've actually done a large part of the heavy lifting of communicating with Voyager 2 as it's kind of made its journey through our solar system, because they're actually able to talk to it as well as listen to it at the same time. And in the last probably month or so, Parkes has actually picked up a lot of the slack because NASA's been very busy over the last few months with InSight and with New Horizons reaching new places in the solar system, that they're almost booked out. So the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and who's partners with NASA, reached out to us at Parkes asking if we could spend some of our time listening to the kind of the messages that Voyager 2 is sending back. Because Voyager 2 doesn't actually have a recorder on board, so any message that it's transmitting, we really only get one shot to hear it. If we miss it, it's gone. So we're really trying to kind of gather as much of the story it's telling as we can as it kind of drifts into the next stage of its scientific journey.
And I suppose, you know, the fact that, you know, it doesn't have a recorder, a lot of the technology on board, you know, it's from 1977, it's 41 years old. What's it like working with that technology?
Well, it's surprisingly simple on our end because Parkes is even older. That being said, Parkes has been continually upgraded and it's 100,000 times more sensitive than it was when it was first commissioned in the 60s. But yes, you're right. There are a bunch of instruments that are still working on board. The most important one, and maybe the biggest kind of contrast to Voyager 1, is that there's a plasma science experiment that's still working on Voyager 2 that stopped a long time ago on Voyager 1. And so what that's allowed us to do is to actually measure the density of plasma, which is kind of like a hot gas coming from our sun. And it's actually that kind of the drop-off in the levels of that plasma that's allowed us to actually confidently say that we are indeed outside of the heliopause. And then on top of that, you have a bunch of other experiments that measure the magnetic field strength to measure cosmic rays, which are accelerated particles from our sun and from supernova out in the galaxy. But it's still very much a working instrument.
And so what is the significance of the Voyager craft reaching interstellar space? It sounds like there's some really interesting stuff out there.
There definitely is. And I think one of the interesting things about Voyager 2 is, one, like I said earlier, we still have that plasma experiment working. So that is a very unique measurement and really the only time that humans have ever been able to measure anything going on outside in interstellar space. Another is Voyager 2 and Voyager 1 left at very different angles to one another outside of the heliopause. And that's allowed us to actually have a very stark contrast about what's going on one side of the heliopause and what might be going on outside on the other one. And what we've learned so far is that they're not symmetric. And that's not totally surprising because we know that the heliopause kind of breathes. It's actually caused by the bubble or the kind of, you can think of it as a wind or a bubble that's being blown out by our sun. And it actually kind of goes in and out through the solar cycle. And so we know that just by comparing the two and comparing the types of kind of where we were in the solar cycle when we finally reached these far, far reaches of space, that things don't look the same going up or going down. And that's not totally unexpected, but at the same time, it's interesting nonetheless.
I'm going to ask a very technical question.
Yes.
Heliopause, what is that?
So the heliopause is where the kind of the pressure of our sun is balanced by all of the winds of all of the stars everywhere in the galaxy. So I like to think of it as a bubble, right? So, or maybe even a balloon. If you're blowing up a balloon, at some point, the pressure from the elastic is holding up against your breath, and you can't actually inflate it anymore. that's kind of like what the heliopause is. It's kind of a protective bubble in which our solar system fits as we kind of swirl around the galaxy, which is our Milky Way.
Well, just before I do let you go, Jane, do we know, you know, if there's any indication when we might lose contact with Voyager 2?
Sadly, yes. So it is a balance, a very, very intricate balance between temperature and between the energy reserves that they have left on Voyager 2. The best estimates are about 5 to 10 years, and picking which instruments we turn off as we go along. But as NASA and JPL have suggested, if they can make it to the 50th anniversary mark of Voyager 2, they will consider it a huge success. So that's 9 more years from now.
Amazing stuff. Jane, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Tess.